Basically, I have one message, and that is that every country gets the fascism that it deserves. And that's the message I'm going to promote today. Every country gets the fascism it deserves. You know, it's interesting that we live in this kind of bubble where we believe that fascism happened in Italy and Germany, and every fascism must resemble it. And you know, we in fact live with that kind of fear-mongering from liberals and others who have us believe that the real fascists are neo-Nazis and other fringe idiots who live in our society and who are generally basically delegitimized. That they are the fascists and everybody else is within reasonable discourse. You understand? That if you don't have a swastika, if you don't shave your head, if you don't hate Jews, then you cannot be a fascist. You understand? They are the real fascists. Everybody else is somehow liberal and reasonable. They have made the space and category of fascism restricted only to the lunatic. And they can then sit back and say that they are progressives. They are making democracy happen around the world. They export democracy, in fact, to places like Iraq and Afghanistan, etc. They are reasonable. We have, as a great sociologist and writer wrote 25, maybe 30 years ago, I don't remember, he wrote the book Friendly Fascism. We have a friendly fascism in the United States, friendly for some, fascist for others. Basically, you know who it's friendly toward and who it's fascist against. It is fascist every day against people who live in oppressed communities, who live in generalized poverty. And certainly, since the United States isn't a territory, but since the United States is the world, it is fascist toward the bulk of the population of the world. So think about it. When we think about fascism, no longer, I would submit to you, should we think of fascism only within the bounds of a nation state. We have to think about something that you might consider as global fascism. This is a friendly fascism globally, friendly to the global elites, who also sup, you know, at the high table, and fascist toward everybody else who wants to make their dreams and destiny. It is that kind of friendly fascism, and that has to be confronted. The face of that fascism doesn't matter if he's an idiot, if he has a low IQ, all that stuff is irrelevant. It is that stuff that's making the ruling class in the United States split in its consensus. They would like to replace this moron with another intelligent fascist, and that is their game. They are embarrassed by imbecilism, but not by fascism. This doesn't mean I won't vote for Kerry, by the way. Let me put it to you this way, my friends. This kind of friendly fascism that went to war in Iraq, you know, we think and we are told constantly that this is, of course, the greatest country in the world. You know that that is one of the illusions of fascism. We are the greatest country. We are the Fourth Reich, the Fifth Reich, maybe the Sixth Reich. Who's counting any longer? One of the Reichs, certainly, which will have its thousand-year Reich finally. But we are also told we are a booming economy. But don't be fooled by that, my friends. Of course, within, this is in complete crisis. I'm not one of those lefties, by the way, that's always foretelling crisis. But when you have $7 trillion debt, when that debt is held overseas by other corrupt elites who basically have the United States economy on a stranglehold, and they also are committed to the protection of the dollar, you understand, as the main currency in the world, and when another savage like Saddam Hussein, you understand, he is our savage first, and then he becomes their savage. In other words, he is our savage to beat the Iranians. When that becomes beside the point, suddenly he becomes the savage and must be overthrown. But when Saddam Hussein comes to the OPEC nations a year ago and says, listen, no, 2 years ago now, let's change our holdings from our petrodollars to petro-euros. You know, that kind of thing sends a real chill into the hearts of financial markets globally. Because nobody wants the dollar to lose its standing. All that money held in Switzerland, for instance, by corrupt elites around the world, is not held in Swiss francs. That's held in dollars. All the profits that were by Mobutu, you know, the $10 million that Mobutu had in the Swiss bank, which was equivalent to the Congo's debt, identical with the debt of his own country, that $10 million was held in dollars. All these elites around the world need to keep the dollar stable. Jeffrey Gettleman in the New York Times wrote a brilliant line. He met a Marine and the Marine said, my friend, if they came to San Diego, that is some foreigners came to San Diego, we would fight up and stand against them just like the people of Najaf. Of course, he doesn't know what he's talking about because, my friends, we are already under occupation and we have no idea what to do. You know, we are the most disorganized population. We have sporadic resistance, but we don't know really how to stand up against tyranny and fascism. So let me now start with my sense of what does it mean in our movements, our thriving social movements, our alive social movements? What has it meant for us to fight power? I'll submit to you that in the last century, we have made enormous gains. Please do not talk of our social movements without acknowledging the massive gains we have made. We have made enormous gains. But power is very intelligent. Power is not static. Power is not dumb. Just when we won the right to vote, for instance, in the state, just when people won equal rights in the state, they disemboweled the state. Please don't speak disparagingly about our major social movements. Just when we won rights in the state, power very cleverly and craftily disemboweled the state. If you talk to people, and you may just talk to yourselves because you've all had this experience, when you do any community organizing and you finally enter town hall, like for instance people did in South Africa, in the United States, you enter town hall, you've brought 300-400 people to fight against, say, you know, wanting to increase or keep the power alive in the winter, to keep heating alive, etc. Nobody in town hall says we can make any decisions. In fact, some of the people say we are on your side, but there's nothing we can do. In fact, they are giving us the classic line of the International Monetary Fund and Margaret Thatcher, which is there is no alternative, what they call TINA. There is nothing we can do. And in fact, their hands are tied. But we are also therefore working in wheels that are spinning and having very little traction. You have to understand that people have organized greatly, but our gains in the last 15 years have been minimal. And I want us to think about why our gains have been minimal. I'd like to suggest to you that around the country, community organizations are having a very serious discussion about just this. I'll just share with you in a few minutes two examples. One at the Center for Third World Organizing in Oakland, and the other in Alexandria, Virginia, at the Tenants and Workers Support Committee. There have been extensive discussions about what they are calling municipal socialism. For instance, by the way, the phrase that we should think about is not TINA anymore. If you went to the World Social Forum in Mumbai, or if you heard reports from there, the new slogan is not TINA, it is SITA. Socialism is the alternative. Anyway, that should be our slogan in response. What is municipal socialism? It's very simple. You see, our social movements have been vibrant. Our social movements have fought hard and have been disparaged, fighting anti-racism, homophobia, you know, for feminism, etc. These have been our broad social movements for broader healthcare, etc. They've been disparaged even by our allies and comrades who've gone into electoral politics. And you know all those parties. They disparage social movements. They want to talk about something called bread and butter issues. They have the fantasy of the white male electorate that they want to go after. They say, let's not talk about racism. Let's not talk about feminism. Let's not talk about sexual liberation. Let's only talk about economic issues. Have you met these people? They are there. They are the people we are often asked to vote for in our localities. The problem with them is they have a fantasy of the voter. They do not realize that the most vibrant parts of our movement are these social movements. The problem is they have taken over the electoral space, and we don't have a theory of how to deal with elections, which is why every 4 years or every 3.5 years, we have the same boring argument, which is, who do you vote for? You can't vote for the Democrats, must vote for the Greens, can't vote for the Greens, have to vote for the Democrats, don't like the Republicans, anyone but Bush, but we have no idea what we'll do when we enter the voting booth. It's the same stupid argument we have every 3.5 years, and it is meaningless. It's a waste of our time. It is a waste of our energy. The real discussion we need to have is, do we as the social movements have a theory of electoral power? Do we know what we're going to do if we take power, how we take power, and are we just going to take power, my friends, so that we can sit inside those town halls and say there is nothing we can do because there is no alternative? That's the question we need to ask ourselves, and I want to ask you this. Have you looked, for instance, at Porto Alegre, where people have been interestingly thinking about things like participatory budgeting? Have you looked at places like Kerala, where people are looking interestingly at things like people's planning? There are many alternatives being planned and practiced around the world, but we live in a bubble in the United States. We believe that even though we are the left, we are exceptional in some way, that we are the leaders in the movement, that we have the ideas and they have the practice, that we should clap when in South Africa they toy in the courthouse, but we, for instance, have the ideas. This is false. We need to look around the world to see how people are in innovative ways taking power in their localities, not just for the sake of power to become the stooges of a capitalist structure, but how to take power, refashion power, create local government where you have, you know, perfectly good resolutions that ban corporate, coming and goings, etc. Why are we always obsessed with the Tobin tax? You know, this is ATAC's thing with France. Why can't we think about Tobin taxes for our localities? We know, for instance, that the hotels are always going to be there. We know, for instance, that many of the manufacturing will not move if we are aggressive in how we deal with them. I would suggest, this is why I really liked, and I'm going to plug the stupid white, How to Get Stupid White Men Out of Office, League of Pissed Off Voters, an excellent book. I recommend you read it. There are case studies of innovative people around this country doing innovative things to make broad social movement coalitions. One shouldn't be dogmatic, I think, and just talk about this every 3.5 years. We need a theory for our social movements, a theory of how to deal with political power and electoralism. About 10 years ago, almost ending, 10 years ago, the very great dub poet, I don't know if he's listened to anymore, LKJ, the very great dub poet from, I guess he's from the United Kingdom, 10 years ago, had a beautiful song. I used to listen to it. It was like a lullaby for me. But then I'm old-fashioned and a romantic, but it's a lullaby for me. The line was, socialism is a wise old shepherd. It's a beautiful song. I should have brought the CD. You could have played it, you know. It may have enlivened things up for me, at least. Socialism is a wise old shepherd. You know, our terrain is a very vast one. We can't afford to have only a short-term vision of social struggle. It is neoliberal economics, neoclassical economics, that lives in the quarter system. They need to post profits every quarter. We don't need to have strategies that are always quarterly. We need to have a very long vision of what we're doing. Socialism is a wise old shepherd. Our road is a long one. We need to travel that road with patience. I hope you will travel it with patience, with fortitude, with strength. And please, let us not be like Hitchens and Horowitz. Let's travel this road for the entirety of our lives. And I'd like to see you there when we're all with our walkers. Thank you.